plenty for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
So with all the horrible news today, the Trump going to change the Constitution with an executive order, Trump going to Pittsburgh, Hitler running to the Reichstag building. Here's Trump running to tragedy to gain his second. Fortunately, the good people of Pittsburgh sent him packing. But with all of the horrible news, there was a fun story today. At least I thought it was fun. Evidently, a conservative, I don't even want to call them pundit this idiot set up this surefire intelligence group with the purpose, as it's being reported, of allegedly trying to frame Robert Mueller for sexual harassment. Because we're going to show those liberals what it's like to falsely accuse somebody. And as I'm reading through the story, I'm looking through this, it's so childish and amateurish, and it's almost like teenagers, goofing around. But very real consequences here. And fortunately, we now find out the FBI is going to investigate. So the 20-year-old kid who's behind all of this, he's going to be really popular in prison if what he's being accused of, he actually did. And here to share some thoughts on, this and all of the other horrible of the day, I've asked our good friend Sarah Kendzior to come talk with us. She's a journalist, scholar, thought leader, also the author of A View from Flyover Country and the host of Gaslit Nation, the fantastic podcast. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Your resume is getting longer and harder for me to remember and to recite.
It's a sign of the times, but yeah. It's not a good one either. So
what do you think of this potentially? I guess November 1st is the big day. They're going to have an unveiling of the sexual harassment claims against Robert Mueller. Thoughts?
This guy is such a moron, not Mueller, Jacob Wolf. And I'm glad that journalists didn't take the bait. And I'm also glad that the journalists who he contacted to put out this fake story were upfront about the fact that it happened and backed each other up and, said to the public, this is happening and it looks like a setup. That's the kind of transparency that we need. And, I guess it's like he picked the wrong journalists. He picked people who actually had some integrity, I guess, because I feel like if he had gone to the New York Times or Fox News, we might have a serious problem, where this Mueller thing may become a little October surprise or early November surprise. And I'm hoping it doesn't turn into anything ridiculous, but it already is ridiculous. Anything dangerously ridiculous, we shall see.
But I'm looking at this and I'm going, just on its face, it looks childish.
Oh, yeah. This is very ill-conceived. People are pointing out obvious holes in the story, the day they're claiming that Mueller committed the alleged, or I should say non-existent assault. He was in jury duty, so he has an airtight alibi. And the place that they say he committed the assault at was the 19th floor of a hotel that's actually a gym. There's no rooms. So, they didn't put a lot of effort into the actual, fake story. They put a lot of effort into putting out, these little tidbits to journalists, just hoping that they would bite and run with it. Morons. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, I loved some of the other things that, for instance, because the one guy, this Jacob Wolf, said he didn't know anything about it, yet somehow his name is the one that registered the domain name. The phone number for the site, it's being reported, actually goes to his mother's voicemail. What kind of a kid does that to his mother? Oh, my kids don't. And the LinkedIn profiles for the supposed employees are, I guess, edited photos of celebrities.
Yeah, and photos of himself, I believe, as well.
And he darkened.
You know, Yeah, I mean, you know, this guy is like a notorious moron on Twitter, who I guess is trying to extend his range, and now may be facing prosecution. I mean, I have my doubts that that will happen, since no one seems to face prosecution these days for very obvious crimes, but maybe this guy is, you know, such low-hanging fruit that they'll actually just, you know, pluck him up as a punishment and as a warning sign to other people who make up insane stories and attempt to get the mass media to print them.
Or he's gonna be insanely rich because the billionaire class is gonna see him like that other guy who does the videos who got caught and busted. They'll be like twins.
Oh well, they already like him. I mean, you know, the right-wing guys, the sort of Roger Stone types, they already like this dude, and, you know, I suspect he's getting, you know, income from that group of people anyway, which, you know, honestly, it's like, it makes me wonder maybe if there's a little more to this story, because it's so ham-handed and idiotic and easily disproven that there's a little part of me that wonders, like, do they actually have some other better plan, like, in mind? We're all, you know, sitting here talking about this one. Like, I haven't been tweeting about it for that reason, because I just kind of don't know what's up, and I just think this guy's an idiot, and I don't really care. I'm more concerned with, like, the Mueller investigation itself and the high-level criminals that are destroying our country, and I, you know, I want just know what's going on with that. Yeah, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, well, we just wasted 6 minutes on it, so we might as well get to the...
Yeah, well, I don't mind talking about it with you. But, you know, my Twitter, though, the sanctity of my Twitter. But anyway.
Wow, okay, I'm almost there. I'm getting there. But, you know, I guess the question is you know, where is the Mueller investigation going? I mean, nobody's been talking about it because, well, Trump's been dominating the news media lately again.
Yeah, I mean, no one's talked about it in a while, and, you know, before Trump and the various mass killings and attempted bombings that folks tried to carry out either in his name or his ideology, we had the Khashoggi killing, and before that we had Kavanaugh, so we had a number of stories that kind of took Trump and the Mueller probe off the headlines, and, you know, I don't know what's going on with the Mueller probe. I just know, as I think said on every episode of your show, that it's not going on fast enough, particularly after Kavanaugh's appointment. You know, I have a lot of apprehension about whether people will be brought to justice, whether we'll see the results of the probe. You know, we'll see. You know, I'm glad they were at least quick on this idiotic story, you know, kind of showed a little sign of life over there. And, you know, and I understand that, of course, they don't want things to leak. Like, I'd actually be much more upset if the Mueller team were leaking information all over the place. I think it's good that they actually managed to control it and that Mueller's not some sort of, you know, guy who wants to be on TV all the time. Like, you know, I can't stand that. So that's good. But, you know, we are in the early years of a autocratic state, of an authoritarian state, and it's really accelerated, and lives are on the line, and we have a lot of things going on that are very frightening. The citizenship issue, you know, wanting to repeal the 14th Amendment, the amassing of troops at the border to target migrant seekers, you know, this is very frightening stuff. Mueller, of course, is not going to change our entire political system or culture, but he actually can indict some of the worst offenders that are designing these policies, because they are guilty and have on some occasions confessed to their crimes. So I wish you would do that now before people die. That's just my basic request for America.
Yeah, well, look, I've been kind of saying here the last couple of days, ever since the reports that we're sending troops to the southern border, that, you know, all of this talk of, you know, these rabies infested you know, immigrants coming with lice, and, you know, I think what else they say in Fox News was smallpox and HIV, and, you know, they just had all of these horrible diseases, and they were coming to infest us. That, you know, we're sending troops down to the border who are going to be armed with a threat from the president that, you know, bad things could happen. And if something does bad happen, I fear we've already laid the groundwork for people to go, they were just, you know, rabies infested. They had lice. No big deal.
Yeah, this is the same rhetoric you saw in Nazi Germany, in Rwanda, in Serbia under Milosevic. Like, this is, you know, fascist, eliminationist rhetoric, where you're depersonalizing people, you're accusing them of being diseased, you're accusing them of sort of inherently in a bodily form carrying a threat. I think the use of the word caravan by Trump's team and by the media was purposeful. I think it was meant to conjure up images of the Middle East. And then, of course, we had various accusations, some that there was Muslim terrorists among the group. Also, of course, anti-Semites are saying, oh no, there are Jews hiding in there and it's Soros, so you had an anti-Semitic component to it. You know, this is a group of migrant seekers, and they are very far from the border. This happens routinely. The border is a point of entry where you can ask, you know, to try to plea, for political asylum. There is nothing really that unusual going on other than the attention from the administration, the media hype, especially Fox News, but other outlets as well. And, of course, the troops being summoned, which really worries me because, you know, I don't know. I studied a massacre in Uzbekistan for a lot of my academic career, one in the Andijan massacre in 2005, where the government opened fire on its own citizens, and then everyone knew, 800 people died. So everyone knew that this happened, and they just lied and lied and lied for years. And it was a sort of lesson for me that a government can get away with an atrocity of that magnitude in plain sight, and no one will do anything to fix it, and people won't be able to grieve for their victims, and the international community won't be able to intervene effectively. And it kind of shattered my faith in justice. And I just look at this situation. I'm not saying the same thing will happen. There's something about it that reminds me of it, where you feel it coming. You know, you feel this sort of shift in momentum, and you watch people act with such cruel impunity. And I just look at these groups of migrant seekers and just wonder, they would kill them. And I just hope our troops have clarity of conscience. And if you see, women and children arriving at this border, even if they're ordered from above to fire on them, I hope they refuse. I hope people act in a humane way.
To highlight your point, we're still holding children. The outrage only lasted so long, and now you don't hear about it at all. And yet the detention center, not too far from here in Reading, Pennsylvania, is still open. There are still kids being held and still not with their families. The issue didn't go away. We've just kind of forgotten about it. And while for a second we may be outraged if tragedy were to unfortunately occur, I don't know that our ability to hold on to it would matter.
I mean, I think people would be outrage, and then I think what would happen is what tends to happen after the outrage would be followed by lies from the administration. It would be followed by a both sides narrative.
Yep.
From places like New York Times and some of the cable outlets, and then a sort of sense of helplessness. And I think people still are outraged about the abuse of migrant children and separating them from their parents, and there's certainly groups out there actively reporting it, and there's, the Texas Tribune is still reporting on the issue, and lawyers are trying to help them, but, the use of military force within the U.S. border is, and on the Mexican border, it would be like a new step. It would be a new kind of abuse of executive power and a new sign that the military is not here to protect the country, but to protect Trump and the Trump administration, because clearly we do not need this amount of soldiers to go up against a bunch of terrified, hungry migrants, including many women and children. We have more people now going there than in Syria. So I kind of think something else is up. I don't know what that is. I'm not sure. It's wise to even speculate, but it's bad. This is obviously a breach of protocol. There's obviously no justification for it. And we certainly don't want somebody as sadistic and irresponsible as Trump to be acting as commander-in-chief in any capacity, but especially within the United States, where he views American citizens often as the enemy. He proclaims the great number of people in this country to be enemies of the state or to not be real Americans. And he has no interest in protecting us. He actually wants to hurt us. And so if he's able to use the military to pursue that aim, that's a very frightening prospect.
Well, what do you say to there's a theory out there that this is all just, you know, show for the election. This is to rally up the base. This is to get everybody all tingly in the panties and ready to vote on Tuesday.
I'm just not sure that that would work, because I think it's motivating Democrats or independents who are upset by it as much as it might be motivating the, you know, Fox News Trump base, which would have come out and voted for him anyway. Like, I think folks who would believe that there's some sort of smallpox leading caravan approaching up the Mexican border are already on Team Trump. So I'm not sure it benefits. And the other thing is when you're dealing with these, you know, authoritarian regimes that rely so heavily on spectacle, is that the spectacle, it can't just exist as a distraction, because everybody interprets it differently. And you have actual people being put into action. You know, the troops are being treated like props, but they are still armed individuals, and they're still standing on the border. And that's saying something to people who live in Texas, and that's saying something to Mexico and affecting U.S.-Mexican relations. So you can't be a president and engage in a military action and then just do it for theatrics' sake for a midterm, you know, or for an election. Like, we know this from all the various, you know, wag the dog type operations that have happened throughout U.S. history. You know, in some level, this isn't new. I mean, certainly the way he's doing it and where he's doing it is new. But, you know, we've had military action pursued to some degree as a distraction, and it has real effects. It kills people. It destroys, you know, towns and places, and it affects geopolitical relations. So you can't just get theatrical for an election and use the military for your aim. Like, things are going to change, you know, if you go that direction.
No, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I got an interesting email that it's kind of been stuck in my head over the last several hours. That, you know, you reminded me of, you know, 1939 here in this country. There was some thoughts, you know, there were a lot of people who were Nazi sympathizers. There were a lot of people who were, you know, kind of on that side. I mean, we were really divided. And it wasn't until Pearl Harbor that we kind of came together. This person said, you know, we're seeing a lot of the same forces rising again, the same kind of authoritarianism, you know, and, you know, around the world. And he asked the question, you know, where do you see us as a country, you know, being on which side? Do you see us on the side of democracy and self-governance, or leaning towards more the authoritarian side of things? And I don't know how to answer that.
We're leaning towards the authoritarian side of things. And I mean, it's important to stress that the we here, when I would say that, is the tyranny of a minority. You know, it's the Trump administration, it's his elite group of backers, it's his base, which I think is small. You know, sometimes people think it's a third of the country. I really think it's something more like, you know, 10 to 15% of the country. He has the highest disapproval rating of any president in history, but they hold all the power. You know, they dominate the judiciary, Congress, the executive branch, to some extent the media, to some extent independent, allegedly investigative bodies like the FBI. You know, we are becoming authoritarian, but we have a society that still, you know, is behaving to some extent as if we're in a democracy. You know, you and us having this conversation, for example, is a sign that we're not in an authoritarian state. We have freedom of speech still. You know, we have freedom of religion. All those rights are threatened, particularly voting rights, but they're still there. They're still technically there, and we're so used to having them that I think our mindset hasn't completely changed over. You know, you'll know when that happens. But, you know, if we are to be part of an alliance, it's very clear who Trump wants to ally with, you know, with Putin, with, you know, Erdogan, with Duterte, with the new leader in Brazil, you know, with all of these, and with Netanyahu, and with all of these extremist right-wing governments, with any potential leader coming up. When he supported Marine Le Pen when she was running, Viktor Orban in Hungary, you know, any white supremacist or authoritarian leader, that's who he sees as being on his side. And his enemies are people like Justin Trudeau, you know. His enemies are our neighbors, you know, Canada and Mexico. So there's a new world order. He wants to be, it to be, you know, in one direction. I think the American people don't want it to be in that direction. We do want democracy and self-governance. And so there's that obvious tension. And of course, the problem that the Republicans are attempting to rig the system so that we're not able to express our preference and have representatives who are able to uphold it.
No, I mean, I look at Georgia as a perfect example of that. Well, they kicked, 591,000 people off the voting rolls, suppressed, thousands more. And I guess they're holding some absentee ballots as well. I mean, this guy's trying everything he can do to hold down the vote because we don't want those people. We don't want them voting.
Yeah, the Georgia situation is very frustrating, especially because we knew about it so far in advance. I wrote an article for The Correspondent about the midterms being threatened that came out about a year ago. I think it was October 2017. It's the last article I wrote for them because once they decided to become an American publication, they didn't want these kind of critical articles about Trump or the American system. But I fought with them and managed to get in the first couple paragraphs and have them be about Georgia and about what was going on in Georgia and what had happened in 2016 and about Kemp's actions then. And I was very worried about that state in particular, where there were a lot of irregularities. The FBI was allegedly supposed to investigate these voting irregularities. I'm not sure they followed through. And here we are in 2018 with, it seems like few people kind of heeded the warnings or learned the lessons of the past. This is dangerous, same situation in Kansas and the level of impunity and brazenness that these secretaries of state running for higher office, behave with these Republicans is very frightening. They don't care that we know that they're purging the vote. They're really trying to make it seem sort of normal, as if, you don't deserve your vote. They're very openly trying to bring civil rights back, the 1950s or probably much earlier than that. And I don't know. That's something that's like the crucial thing to fight, because if we lose our right to vote, which we very well might, a lot of things follow from that. A lot of other rights will fall. So this election is really a test of that.
Yeah, you're right. And the thing that gets me is, I've got Republican friends who see nothing wrong with what's going on in Georgia or Kansas or any of those places because, it hasn't happened to them yet. And that's the thing that's just really bizarre to me.
Yeah, I think that's a very common thing you see when a democracy shifts to an autocracy is a sort of, I think sometimes it's out of fear, sometimes it's just lack of compassion and lack of, being informed on the subject where it's like, oh, it's not my problem. It's, not affecting me. It eventually will. It always does. And if they really do try to pass this, repeal of the 14th Amendment and birthright citizenship, I think that you're going to see that because, a very large number of Americans have, a parent who's an immigrant. I don't know exactly how they're going to try to reinterpret the Constitution here, but, Trump's own children could potentially be, deported. I mean, we know it wouldn't happen to them, but I think a lot of people may realize their own vulnerability as well as the vulnerability of those they love. I think that we're such a segregated society in a lot of places that people don't know, white people don't know the immediate experience of what it's like to be black and living in Georgia and trying to vote. Same with Missouri. There's a constant level of intimidation that's in practice in a legislature that openly just doesn't want you to participate in the political system. And I think folks, white folks, I should say, don't really grasp that, but they will if it does happen to them, and they too become the disenfranchised. And when you move in the direction of an autocracy, eventually that does happen. The circle of people who benefit from the privilege of the executive state becomes smaller and smaller over time, and that's what will happen in America as well. So those who think they're safe with Trump, with the Republican Party, they absolutely are not, and that includes leaders in the Republican Party, because purges are an inevitability in that kind of system too.
Yeah, I'm often reminded of the Pastor Niemöller quote. First they came for the trade unionists and I said nothing, and then they came for the Jews and I said nothing, and by the time they came for me, there was nobody to speak up. The same thing. You're absolutely right. Same thing. Last question.
Yeah, it is.
What are we expecting next Tuesday? What are you watching? What are you paying attention to? What are going to be the signs for you next Tuesday?
I don't know. I mean, I think we should expect a lot of chaos, both in terms of events, just because tensions in the country are very high. I am expecting, you know, voter suppression. I'm expecting voter intimidation. Hopefully what we'll see is massive turnout. And again, that is the best mechanism to try to override these irregularities and these attempts at disenfranchising voters. If we turn out in massive enough numbers, we may be able to offset that and to at least take, you know, one branch of Congress. But, you know, I'm exhausted. Like, something that you can probably hear in my voice. Like, I've gotten sick yet again, I think, from the sheer stress of this. So I'm sort of going to try to chill a little bit until Tuesday, so that I could be at, like, full throttle once the election happens and afterwards. But, yeah, you know, I guess my final words on that are just please get out and vote. And if you have anyone in your life who's reluctant to vote or doesn't know how to vote or doesn't think their vote matters, it absolutely matters, because this is a human rights election. Strength in numbers is our best asset. So you should absolutely go out and vote.
Absolutely. Look, you're one of the hardest working people I know in this gig. Always very generous with your time with us, and I appreciate that. And I look forward to talking to you again once the election has wrapped up and we see where we end up, where the new world takes us.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks so much, Sarah.
All right.
Good stuff.
Okay, thank you.
Sarah Kendzior, make sure you check out her work. Fantastic podcast, Gaslit Nation. You can follow her at Gaslit Nation, as Sarah Kendzior. Also, maybe pick up the book, The View from Flyover Country, New York Times bestseller. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Think of all the roads. Think of all the crossings. Taking